This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers.
In today's modern technological era, many people have grown up being taught that humankind ascended from apes. The theory of evolution advances the idea multiple species evolved by the combination of time, natural selection, and mutations. It is understood that by these methods, all varieties of creatures came into existence. The perfection and complexity of the human eye, the dexterity of the human hand, or the digestive system of a mosquito. Is it possible that these kinds of things developed by means of evolution? Friends, stay with us as we explore the record of historical facts and logic concerning this subject of evolution.
In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Vance Stinson.
Is human life the end result of a long series of accidents? Meaningless accidents. Are you the product of blind chance? Do human beings exist on this planet and all the life forms that we find on planet Earth, including plants, animals, everything that is? Are all of these things the result of blind chance? You know, there is a naturalistic philosophy that has invaded our institutions of higher learning. We find it in our textbooks. We find it on our television sets coming into our living rooms. It's known as evolution, and it's a naturalistic philosophy that tells us, essentially, that human life is exactly that, the product, the end result of blind chance, a whole series of meaningless things that have happened in eons past. Meaningless mutations resulted in human life. We're told, certainly this goes back to Charles Darwin, and most of us are familiar with that name, the author of The Origin of Species, we're told that human beings came from all living things came from a single-celled organism. And everything eventually evolved over time, and that genetic changes in the form of small mutations accumulated over the years until finally we have the complex life forms we see in the world today. And so we're told that it just happened. It was just a chance. I guess you could say we were all lucky. We're lucky to be here because this might not have happened. Had it been another universe, another time, perhaps the right elements wouldn't have somehow swirled together to form this compound that resulted in the emergence of life. And that's what we're told, and some have even credited Charles Darwin and told of the things that he has contributed to the modern world. One writer said that Charles Darwin has helped us to rid ourselves of the thought that there is some meaning or some grand purpose to human life. And in large part, that is true. Many people today think that they're the end result of a long process of evolution, and many think that there is no God, that all things can be explained, the universe itself and everything in it can be explained through natural sciences. And even though certainly we want to credit natural science, we want to understand it, we want to see how the universe works, how all systems in the universe work, how they operate, and we see the chain of cause and effect going on all around us, we see biological systems, and we see how they work and how they interrelate. This is very important, but the idea that this all came by accident, without any design, kind of takes away the meaning of life. It also takes away any real moral standards. We make our own standards for what standards, what of morality or of ethics, what laws can emerge that govern the way human beings behave themselves if, in fact, there is no God, if, in fact, everything is based on blind chance. I'd like to begin the study today with this program with a scripture. I'd like to read from Romans chapter 1 and verses 18 and 20, 18 through 20. The Apostle Paul says this concerning some of the philosophers who lived during his day. I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version today. Verse 18, he says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and wickedness of men who by their wickedness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. Ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse." This means very simply that we can look at creation and we can see evidence of a great creator. Now, before I continue, I'd like to mention today's literature offer, and you can get it by calling us toll-free at 1-888-578-8791. The offer is entitled, the book that we're offering today is entitled, Evolution, Fact or Fallacy. It's a very thorough booklet, and I believe you will enjoy it. It shows the fallacy. It shows that, in fact, evolution has some very major problems. And also, we have a tape related to this subject entitled The Days of Creation. Be sure and tell the operator whether you would prefer to have the audio tape or the CD. You can have either. Just designate which when you talk to the operator. Again, that's 1-888-578-8791. And you can check us at our website at www.cgi.org. Now, I'd like to begin this discussion by talking about the motions of matter. We look around our world and we see that everything is in motion. We see that there is a continual change of cause and effect. Every effect is the result of a previous cause, and every previous cause is the effect of a still previous cause. And we see this in our own solar system. We see the sun, for example. We know that the sun is a blazing orb, from our point of view, in the sky. We know that it is burning out, that over billions of years it will eventually burn out, and it will be no more. We know also that it had to come into existence for the first time. We know it has not been there forever. The idea that it has always been there flies in the face of some of the most basic and elementary science. We understand that. We also understand that the Earth is revolving around the sun. We make the trip every year all the way around the sun and all the way back from where we started, if you want to put it in those terms. We also know that the Earth is rotating on its axis. We know that it is only rotated a certain number of times. And every time it rotates, once every day, we know that that's a new rotation. We know that you can add to the number if, in fact, you could go back and determine how many times the Earth is rotated on its axis. But we know there is a finite number there. We know also the revolution around the sun is a finite number. This means that this solar system did not always exist. And we know that everything in this universe is just like that. We have this continual motion of matter going on, and every effect is the result of a previous cause. And if you could possibly trace the chain of cause and effect all the way back, eventually you would come to a first link. That means that there can be no past eternity of matter. You see, we're talking about something we understand here. We understand the nature of material things. We understand that matter can be measured. We understand that matter cannot just cease to exist, nor can it just bring itself into existence. That there's a fixed amount of material in this universe, and it cannot increase and it cannot decrease. It can be converted back and forth between matter and energy, but it's always there, always going through a process. And it's not going to simply fade out of existence. Now, according to some, the universe as we know it began with a Big Bang. It's the Big Bang theory. I don't necessarily believe it, but on the other hand, it's not something that I have a particular problem with as a theory. Some believe that a Big Bang occurred, and that the universe, at one point before the Big Bang, all the matter in the universe was compressed into one tiny little dot. And then when the explosion occurred, or when the expansion occurred, all the matter flew away and has continued to expand all these many billions of years until we have what we see as the present universe. And we understand that those distant bodies are still moving away. And many of the bodies in the universe are moving away from each other. The galaxies, they're in motion. And you wonder, well, what was the universe like before the Big Bang? Well, some have said, well, there must have been another universe, and it all eventually collapsed into that little ball of matter until it exploded again. And some have said, well, how many times has this happened? And some have said, well, we can't be sure how many times. There have been, may have been many universes. This process, this oscillating universe, may have been going on for many, many eons. I don't even know how to measure it in terms of time. But if this is the case, and I don't believe it is, by the way, but if this were the case, then we still have to conclude, since we're talking about material things that we can measure, things that we can understand, there had to be a first Big Bang. The only conclusion we can come to is that there can be no past eternity of matter. Matter had to come into existence at some point. Hence, there must be something outside the material universe, some transcendent intelligence, some transcendent power that caused matter to come into existence. You know, that's the most scientific explanation I could possibly offer you. That there must be, in other words, a God who brought this universe into existence. Whether you believe the Big Bang theory or some other theory, you have to have had a first cause. Therefore, God exists. And from that alone, I can believe that there is a transcendent, if you want to call it a higher power, whatever you want to call it, a first cause. Without defining the particular nature of God, we know he must be transcendent and not measurable according to the measuring devices known to the material world. Now, neo-Darwinian evolutionists would have us believe that all the living things on this planet evolved from a simple microbe that accidentally formed millions of years ago. And somehow it managed to reproduce itself. How, we're not told. You know, I wondered about that when this first microbe appeared in the sea, allegedly. How was it that it began to reproduce itself? We're told it must have been by some kind of cellular division, but how did that process, you know, that's a complex process. How did that come about? Well, somehow, by accident, it just happened. Okay, if we start with that. So there was this microbe, and somehow it reproduced itself and continued to reproduce. And over long periods of time, we're told, new genetic information was added to this creature, or these creatures as they spread out through the world. And so new features began to appear. Over many millions of years, finally, as the creature began to emerge from the sea, what had evolved into little fins and flippers now began to evolve into appendages that could take the creature out on the land. And of course, since the creature didn't have lungs, he had to evolve lungs. So through random mutations, little mutations happening at the genetic level, gradually, little by little, over millions of years, lungs formed. And all the other mechanisms of the body, all the other systems of the body, and all of its complexity, and all the creatures we see in the world gradually formed. Now that's what we're told. This is all an accident. It all happened by, if you want to call it a mistake, no one there to make a mistake, according to some evolutionists. But nevertheless, it all happened accidentally, and it's by blind chance. Now, the interesting thing about this is when we look at the world today, and we look at little microbes that still exist, and we look at the more complex creatures, including human beings, we do not see, if you don't get anything else from this program today, listen to this. We do not see new information being added to the genetic blueprints that are passed on from generation to generation, copied and copied and recopied. We don't see it happening, not in the world today. We must theorize, we must take on faith the idea that it did happen in the past. Now, right away, some people are going to object, and I've seen this objection before. It's been presented to me. I recently received an email containing this very objection after someone had read the booklet, Evolution, Fact or Fallacy, that we're offering today. Wrote in, said there are a few good points in the booklet, but basically it's a bunch of garbage. And he went on to say that we could see evolution right before our eyes. And he said, just look at the world of bacteria and look at the superbugs that have been produced as a result of hospitals and doctors using antibiotics. You see, they're adapting, we're told. They're adapting, and they're evolving. And what were once bugs that could be dealt with, microbes, tiny little bacteria, have now evolved into superbugs, and we keep having to make stronger and stronger antibiotics, and they keep evolving and adjusting and making adaptations. And so we're told, this is evolution right before our eyes. But listen to me. Listen very carefully. No, it is not. We do not see, believe it or not, any addition to new information to the genetic blueprints that form, that gives rise to new generations of bacteria. We do not see it. It is not happening. You know, the idea here, of course, is that the little mutations in the survival of the fittest, and I do believe in adaptation, I do believe in the survival of the fittest, I do believe that there is such a thing as natural selection, but I do not believe in Darwinian evolution, which requires that new information be added continuously to the species of this earth in order for them to continue to evolve. There had to come a point in time, in other words, that lung information had to be added. There had to come a point in time when the information that causes these arms and hands and legs and feet and all the bodily organs, there had to come a time when that information was added to the genetic blueprints. Now, many of you are probably familiar with the X-Men. I've seen part two. I saw part one some years ago. In fact, from the 60s, I read some of the original X-Men comic books. And the idea here is that mankind is evolving and these mutants appear on the scene. You wonder, well, how did they get those superhuman powers? Like one of the X-Men can blast beams from his eyes and knock holes in the walls. Another can cause his surroundings to freeze. Another was born with, eventually he sprouted wings. And explanation given is that these are mutants, that they have the power inherent in them. And you say, well, how did they get that way? And the answer is, we simply do not know how they got that way. We don't know. It's just a blooper on the genetic level. They mutated. It's a typo, if you will. And somehow, this typo, this blooper, this mutation just appeared through no cause, no particular cause. It just happened. And here's this guy who is born and eventually has these beams blasting from his eyes, the product of evolution. And some people think that eventually we will evolve into greater creatures, that we will continue to add information, or that as time goes on, information through random blind chance will be added to our genetic codes, and we will eventually change and become superior creatures. But we don't see it happening anywhere. And you know, this random chance is supposedly just like a monkey sitting at a typewriter and typing away and just accidentally typing words from time to time, or whole sentences. This is the kind of random chance. The environment is not forcing evolution. It's just happening. It's just happening randomly. This is the idea that we're led to believe, just as in the X-Men. Well, there are no X-critters. On the bacterial level, there are no X-critters. I'd like to tell you what does happen about those mutant bugs. I'd like to tell you what happens. There's a couple of different things that can happen that result in the so-called superbugs. Suppose you are in the hospital, you have, if you're running a high fever, you have some kind of bacterial infection. And there are, say, 2 million bacterium in your body. You have 2 million of the little critters in there causing all kinds of problems. The doctor gives you an antibiotic, and it kills all but 10 of them. And why didn't it kill those 10? Because they were just stronger than the others. Just like you might have a family of 9 brothers, all of them are 5'7 or 5'8, and one of them happens to be 6'7. That can happen, and it does happen from time to time. This is not new information being added to the genetic blueprint. The information is already there. So when you wipe out the weaker bugs and the fittest survive, then you're not adding information to the genetic blueprint. You're taking away the information that causes the other bacteria to be susceptible to penicillin and other antibiotics to begin with. You're removing genetic information, not adding to it. It's very simple. Now, there's something else that happens in some cases. Sometimes mutation really does occur. And the result is that bugs are born or hatched or however they come about, they have defects. They're not superior. They're not superbugs. They're defective bugs. And normally speaking, these little critters, for lack of a better term, the bacteria, are capable of absorbing nutrients from your bodily fluids. And of course, the waste matter is produced, and the toxins are formed, and that's why you get sick. Now, some bugs are unable to absorb nutrients efficiently. Why? Because they're mutations. They have defects. In other words, bugs with birth defects. That's what it amounts to. Now, when penicillin or some other antibiotic is introduced into the body, then the bugs who can efficiently, the healthy bugs who can efficiently take in the bodily fluids and extract nutrients from them, from it, also take in the antibiotic and they die quickly. The defective bugs are unable to process it. So in that case, a defect as a result of a mutation may actually preserve the lives of those bugs. Now, what happens when you get out of the hospital? You're in that sterile environment in the hospital. You're taking the antibiotics, and those bugs stay alive. But the super bugs, the real strong bugs, continue to die. And you stay sick as long as you're in the hospital. You get outside the hospital. You go out in nature, sunshine, fresh air. You roll in the dirt a little bit. You sweat. And you know what's happening? You're taking in more microbes. They're going into your nostrils, or you're breathing them in. You're swallowing them. The little dust particles that gather inside your mouth as you play out in the open doors. And guess what happens? You take in microbes, and for the most part, they're not harmful. Sometimes you do get one that's pretty bad and can cause some bad results. But they're not harmful. But what they do, they compete with the bugs that have been making you sick, and they destroy them. So these are not super bugs at all. That's ridiculous. Those are not super bugs. They're wimps. And they're destroyed by the bugs that are in the natural environment. Now, there's some very interesting quotations in this regard that I have from various scientists. Pierre Grasset, a famous French biologist, said in the book Evolution of Living Things, he said that mutations, talking about mutations in bacteria, do not produce any kind of evolution. Dr. Lee Spetner, who is a highly qualified scientist, who taught information and communication theory at Johns Hopkins University, had this to say in his book, Not by Chance. He said, in all the reading I've done in the life sciences literature, I've never found a mutation that added information. You see, in all of the examples we know of in nature, whether you're talking about bacteria or higher organisms, when they change through adaptation, this is not an addition to information at the genetic level. Usually it is a deletion of such information. So when you hear somebody talk about the superbug, this is evolution right before our eyes, you don't believe it because it's not true. Now, with all of that in mind, all that I've said in mind, think about this. You have, and I have, most of us have, that is, something right here on our faces that's just absolutely marvelous. We call them eyes. They have the capability of adjusting the amount of light that comes in so that we can see. If those images were not properly there inside the eye and being projected to where our brains could interpret the image, then we would not be able to see. That means if too much light comes in, we couldn't see. If not enough light comes in, we can't see. So we have a mechanism in the eye that adjusts the amount of light. Also, there's contractile materials attached to the eye. We call them muscles. That enables the eyes to move from one side to the other. And as I look around the room here, I can see the floor director, I can see the cameramen and the cameras and all kinds of things in this room with these eyes. And I can move my eyes freely with the muscles that are attached to them. And they're just in the right location on the top of the organism, not on the kneecaps, not on the back, but in just the right location. And they work in unison with these four other information-gathering systems, these other sensory mechanisms, the hearing, the feel, the taste, and the smell, all working in unison, enabling me to process the information in my environment. Now, you tell me that you believe that that happened as a result of blind chance through multi-mutations. I've got some land that I'd like to sell you. It didn't happen, folks. It didn't happen. There's only one conclusion that we can draw when we look at all of this. When we look at the complexity of the human body, when we look at the irreducible complexity of the systems that make up all the living organisms out there, and this material universe, life on this earth, then we have to come to this conclusion: God created the heavens and the earth. Watch this message. Tune in again next week for another edition of The Armor of God.
Evolutionists are interesting people. Take ducks, for example. I'm sure they could give you a very good argument that ducks evolved somehow. How about the duck-billed platypus? It isn't really a duck, but it has a bill like a duck. It lays eggs like a duck, but it's a mammal. How do you explain the duck-billed platypus in the evolutionary process? By that I mean, could you find someplace on this planet a partially developed or partially evolved duck-billed platypus? Do they bear their young live, for example? They haven't achieved the status of an egg-laying mammal? Doesn't seem plausible, does it? But yet, that is what the evolutionists would have us believe, that through the process of time, everything just happened or evolved. What about that same evolutionist who would be stung by a bumblebee, which, by all physical standards, can't even fly? Interesting that this same evolutionist would be stung by a bumblebee that can't fly, is trying to propose to us that a duck-billed platypus evolved in some fashion. We need to understand that God did create this world and everything in it for a purpose. So, to help us understand who He is and His glory and His wonder and the way He can create creatures like no one else, send away for the booklet, Evolution, Fact or Fallacy, and the tape or the CD, The Days of Creation. All of this is free by dialing 888-578-8791 or on the internet, www.cgi.org. This is Dwayne Nickel reminding you to send away for the booklets and to stay tuned every week for another Armor of God program and another presentation.
Exploring current global conditions along with the latest social trends, the Armor of God asks the question, what are the solutions to our broken world? Right here every week, new perspectives are presented for your consideration by our commentators. The Armor of God challenges you to be vigilant in your outlook and understanding of this world in these tumultuous times. Don't miss this week's program. Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by The Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710. Call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791 or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at cgi.org or email us at armorofgod@cgi.org. We appreciate your prayers and support.
This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers.